I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Denise Chong joins me again. The acclaimed and best-selling author has a new book out, Lives of the Family, Stories of Fate and Circumstance. I've read bits of it and I've found it riveting stuff. I'll get Ms. Chong to tell us about this book, about the stories she tells, and the people who we meet in this book. The book is haunting, moving, heartbreaking at times, and inspiring. In it, she chronicles the lives of some of Canada's early Chinese families around the Ottawa area. These would be people of Denise's parents' and grandparents' generation who came to Canada, plagued by prejudice and uncertainty. Immigrants come to this country facing being ostracized and suffering unimaginable loneliness. It's a great book in that we must remember our country's history, marred by the head tax and the Exclusion Act. Denise Chong's previous books include The Concubine's Children, The Girl in the Picture, and Egg on Mao, which she was last on with 4 years ago. This new book is published by Random House. The website for more is at livesofthefamily.com. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Denise Chong. Ms. Chong, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So how did this book come about?
I started about 3 or 4 years ago because I had a request to do an educational website to document the disappearing Chinese cafes in the Ottawa area and the early history of the Chinese who settled the area. And it was while doing this documentation and interviewing families that I got the idea that I thought to myself, oh my God, you know, the cafes may be gone, the doors may be closed, the addresses you even have to dig to look them up. But the real legacy of these families was the experience of them living in total isolation from what would be the large Chinatowns of the time, living far from the West Coast, and their experience in small-town Canada. So I thought, and, well, the other thing is that people seem to tell me still secrets to me.
Yeah.
They give voice to memories that they you know, have not told before. And it's through their stories that I realized I could chart the emotional journey of being a new immigrant and being alone among a sea of for the Chinese, it would be being the only Chinese family in what would be a predominantly white community. So that's when I got the idea of you know, it's what you said of heartbreak and tragedy, but there's also success. But it's that initial struggle that seemed to me to make such a have such resonance for a book of stories.
Now, if I recall, you were born in Prince George. Is that right?
I'm raised in Prince George,
raised
so I kind of think of it as my hometown.
Yeah.
But in a sense, it's my childhood is parallel to those, because I never really thought about it before until I was actually doing this book, that I, too, grew up where I was. My family was the only Chinese family. We lived on the airport outside of the town, and, you know, very quickly we realized that not only were we were the only Chinese family, but very quickly I kind of forgot that I was Chinese, and then, you know, you quickly assimilate into the larger community.
Now, Deb, you opened the book by talking about your growing up in Prince George, and I guess there was a restaurant in town that was run by a Chinese couple, right?
Yes, I remember it clearly that we drove up from Vancouver. We arrive, it's Christmas Eve, it's midnight, and my father's driving around the deserted streets, and he spies this restaurant, and my mother has this address that she remembers, and we look it up, and we see the doors are locked and it's closed, but we see in the back that there are some staff sitting around a table eating, and my father knocks on the door. And then what I remember is the exclamation of the proprietors that they're so happy to see another Chinese face, and they welcome us in. And so that, I started the book in that way, because that's akin to what happens in small towns across Canada, across North America, if you like, where the lone Chinese restaurant is the lone Chinese family, and they're far from people who would, family who's in China, they're far from any experience of others who speak Chinese, never mind see a Chinese face. And so that's the kind of experience that I wanted to try and capture.
And the food in these restaurants would be a westernized sort of a Chinese food, sort of like egg foo young and sweet and sour pork. And I mean, we live in metropolitan centers, you in Ottawa and I in Vancouver, and so we're spoiled with sort of what we know as Chinese food today. But it was a sort of different cuisine, right?
Well, if you go back even earlier, in fact, the early restaurateurs, and this is dating back to the early part of the century, they began actually by serving almost coffee counter food. They didn't even serve Chinese food at all. Yeah. They served, you know, it would be the tomato juice and you know, the hamburger steak and the hot dog and the hamburger. And then it's only until later, by the time they could get fresh vegetables and more Chinese ingredients, that they began to serve what you would say was westernized Chinese food. But they were also seeking more business from to get more people coming to the restaurants. So really, if you wanted the Chinese food, you had to go to Chinatown. But in the small towns, you got Western food first. Then they added sort of westernized Chinese food in what you've talked about, egg rolls, chicken balls, and so on.
Yeah.
And then, you're right, only now with the much more extensive immigration from China do you get the specialized cuisine.
Now, so the period in the book that you cover would be, say, from, I guess, it'd be the 20th century, sort of up to the I guess, the 60s, right?
I covered that period because in the aftermath of exclusion, which the Canada shuts the door to the Chinese, and for 2.5 decades that door is firmly shut and then opens again ever so gradually after the Second World War, it's the aftermath of exclusion that you get both the happiness and the heartbreak. You get families coming over in this decade into the 60s who haven't even met their children who haven't even met their fathers before, wives who've lived apart from husbands for 2 decades or more. You get paper sons and paper daughters, because in those intervening years, the reality has set in. People have died, people have aged, and there are fewer slots available than people wanting to escape from what is now communist China. They wanted to escape overcrowded Hong Kong. So they illegally come as paper sons, paper daughters. There aren't enough brides in Canada for Chinese men. Women come as COD brides. So you can imagine dropping a COD bride, say, from cosmopolitan Hong Kong into a farming village outside Ottawa. So all these calamities and good news and bad news all serve to me to illuminate what is almost a universal immigrant experience, not just particular to the Chinese, but what happens when you uproot and then you find yourself in a very different place and trying to determine your uncertain future.
Now, there are people in this book that we would recognize, right?
There are famous names in the sense that one of the most well-known names in Ottawa and in Canada was a family called the Poys,
right,
who came during the Second World War in an exception to Canada, allowing Chinese to enter the country. And they came to Ottawa, where Adrian Clarkson, as a three-year-old, came, lived in a row house within sight of where she would end up as a governor general. And her parents arrive. Her father speaks English, but her mother never learns a word of English. And is dropped into what, for her, becomes a very lonely life in Hong Kong, in Ottawa. But out of that, Adrian Clarkson thrives in Ottawa and goes on to become, of course, Governor General. But I think that others are recognizable in the sense that in every small town in Canada, people can remember the Chinese restaurant, the Chinese-owned restaurant. You know, whether they went there for their morning coffee or after school, or, you know, the team went after a softball game, or so they remember those people, but they knew little of what went on in the family life above the restaurant or behind the restaurant, or the bachelors who worked for them and maybe lived out their lives working for that cafe.
Now, you in the course of writing this book, immersed yourself in the stories and the lives, the memories of these people. It must have been an emotional experience, was it?
Absolutely. Many tears were shed by the people I interviewed because I think when you emigrate and you have something at your back, you've left one shore for another, and you know, in order to see the future, you've necessarily had to lose sight of the shore you've left behind. So I was probing at memory that was buried deep, and some of those memories are of suicide, of torture, born of circumstances in China where, for example, the Japanese war meant that people were not only suffering from the brutalities of the Japanese, but the deprivations of war meant that a mother fell ill and didn't think she could feed her children, and she, you know, instead of going to the doctor, what happened? She ends up taking her own life. It's born of upheaval of revolution, so that a family, a mother and her children whose husband is in Smith Falls, Ontario, is awaiting the father to try and husband to bring them to Canada. And in that intervening period, the family is punished because they have an overseas relative. And the mother experiences torture at the hands of the communists in the village, as does a relative of the family. And then the moment they are freed, the relative goes and throws herself into a lake because having suffered the torture, she now can no longer face life. So for those people to spill those memories, for which maybe they never even been asked about them before, yes, to relive them is evokes great tears all around. But on the other hand, when you tell these stories, and it's not just in China that there were the difficulties, there was isolation and loneliness in Canada, but when you tell them, I think these people know that when you tell of the struggle, you better appreciate the success that did come, and it did come to all of them.
The last line of your book is wonderfully moving. May I read it?
Yes.
Yeah, of course, depending on how one holds the tapestry of life up to the light, different threads can catch one's attention. I wove them into stories I made mine, but now they're yours. It's just such a powerful line, and because it really means that whether you're like my parents are Filipino, yours are Chinese, it's essentially a Canadian story, isn't it?
Yes, I think that, you know, that is what is, it's not so much courage to tell a story, it's generosity to share it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I mean. When you're generous enough to share it, it's because I give it to you. And together, they are, my story becomes yours, yours becomes mine. They are our stories.
Well, what does the writing of this book do for your understanding of yourself and your family?
Well, I know that the previous works and literary attention has been given to the early history of the Chinese, in particular, of course, the railway building, the Chinatown, the effect of exclusion. So I documented that in The Concubine's Children. But until I wrote this book, I didn't really think about how sometimes, but for a fateful decision, your life could have taken a very different course. So, you know, but for my grandmother deciding that her third daughter would be born in Canada so that my mother was born here, I too, our families also could have had the story just unfold in China. Had my grandfather decided to bring my aunts from China instead of selling their Canadian birth certificates, then, you know, but for that, my mother's sisters could, in fact, have come to Canada in the 50s and maybe ended up moving to a small town, maybe ended up moving to, you know, across the country to the east. So it made me realize how our fate sometimes it rests on not even sometimes our own decision, but someone else's fateful decision.
And it enforces the sort of being Canadian. I mean, this goes back to the Citizenship Week speech, and which is much cited. You feel closer to that, don't you?
I do. I think that it when you tell stories like this, it only enriches and gives more value to the sense of what it means of the good fortune of being Canadian, and how proud I am that to be Canadian is a complex thing. It's a complicated thing, and we're all the richer for that complexity of it.
Did you have in mind someone who ought to read this book?
Oh, I don't. When I write, I don't think of the reader so much, but I think I write for myself, but I think that I hope that they will see themselves in it. It doesn't matter whether you're a many-generation Canadian or you meet a new immigrant, you will see the same sense of what it means to grasp and glimpse a common future, you know, where you grab on to what it means now to put your foot firmly in this land, and you're going to better your life for your future generations. This is what it means, because you've left one country and you've planted your feet firmly in Canada.
You'll be doing events out here in Vancouver in November, is that right?
Yes, I'll be speaking. There's a couple of speaking engagements, including the public library.
Yeah, so people can visit livesofthefamily.com for, there are dates across the country too, right?
Yes, yeah. Yes, there are.
I guess the book's just come out. It's a little soon, I guess, to ask what you're working on next, but I guess I'll ask it anyway. Are you working on another book now?
Oh, let's just say I'm. It's mulling in my brain.
Yeah.
I've just finished a trip to China to promote The Concubine's Children in Chinese.
Oh, really?
So that gave me, of course, the luxury of... with this new book coming out, it just gave me so much even more empathy for the people who crisscrossed the ocean decades ago.
I saw a tweet of yours last week. You met a student whose thesis is on The Concubine's Children, is that right?
Yes, a doctoral candidate at a Chinese university, yes. So once stories of like The Concubine's Children of my grandmother being a concubine and in an era of foot binding and so on, where once they were thought to be stories of old China, now the Chinese, who have become so much more global themselves, are fascinated by those who left the motherland and could have an attachment to a faraway foreign land and yet still have family ties in China. So there's great fascination about that. And I discovered the Chinese know a fair bit, or say they know a fair bit about America or Britain or Australia, but they admit to knowing little about Canada.
That must be really fun to have your work studied like that.
I'm very humbled by it.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't speak the language, so to hear, even mediated through an interpreter, you realize, in fact, you're speaking a common language of family and ties and separation and heartbreak and jubilation. It's you're speaking a common language of the heart.
I hope this book does well for you, because having read what I've read of it, I mean, I just hope that people will pick it up and talk about it, and because it is our history. It's so good talking again. Congratulations on this remarkable book.
Thank you, Joseph. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
The website for more, livesofthefamily.com. The book is called Lives of the Family, Stories of Fate and Circumstance. It's published by Random House. Its author, Denise Chung, joining me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.